All right, so my name is Angus Henderson, and today is September 21st, 2018. I'm talking to Connor Terry. This interview is part of the OSU Diverse Sexuality and Gender Oral History Project, specifically focused on the history of the campus drag show, Dragonfly. So tell me a little bit about yourself. Where are you from? All that kind of stuff. No, you look at me. It's okay. Fine.
So my name is Connor Terry. This will actually be my 7th year here on campus. Mm-hmm. So I've been here a bit longer than one likes to be in Stillwater. So I did my undergraduate degree here in psychology with a minor in sociology. Graduated in 2016, and in that time also spent a solid 3 years in what was then SOTA, then turned OSQ&A, in multiple different roles, and then returned in the spring of 2017 for my master's in educational leadership studies. So,
are you still in your master's program now?
Yes, awesome. I will graduate in May. So
congratulations.
Here's hoping we make it.
I feel you. I'm out in December, but this is my second bachelor's. Anyway. So, the purpose of this interview, tell me about the first dragonfly that you saw. We'll just start there.
The first dragonfly that I went to, a little bit different compared to its current version. It was, I don't want to say it's very reminiscent of what you would see at a club, but it was kind of on par with that. You go, for example, if you went to Roscoe's in Chicago, kind of that kind of club, and you paid $25-$40 to go see a show of 6, 7, 8, 9 entertainers, mm-hmm. That you'd be in there for about 2 hours. Each person would do about 2 numbers, and it would kind of be a fun, exciting night. That's pretty much what Dragonfly was, except on quite a bigger stage because it was in West Watkins. So that show went on, I think it started about 7, probably went to about 9:30, maybe pushing in 10. It was actually a really interesting experience because one, for me, that had been my first time going to a drag show, little baby freshman me, going over there. And then two, it was kind of a big deal because that was the year that Chad Michaels came out to the show. And that was, I don't quite recall, but I believe it's either right before or right after her All-Stars win. So it was kind of a big deal to have her come out, basically. And so she came out and did that part of the show. Obviously, she did her 2 share numbers and went on her way. But yeah, that one was quite interesting.
That was the first drag show you ever saw?
Yes.
Were you out at the time?
At the time, I wasn't. So it wasn't until about August of the same year, but my sophomore year of college, that I officially came out. And that, completely unrelated to these two things are completely unrelated. That one was just a prime opportune moment to just come out to my parents. That's a very long story. But yeah, so it was kind of a bit of a culture shock, but an exciting culture shock. Like, kind of like, you know, the first number starts and you're like, oh wow, that's believable. And then like the second one starts and you're like, I'm having fun. And then my boyfriend at the time made me tip Chad Michaels. So that was also exciting/terrifying. Because, you know, you're approaching a man dressed as a woman who's about 3 inches taller than you, but also on a platform, dressed up as Cher, the icon. So just a bit nervous, but yeah.
Oh, do you remember how you felt seeing drag for the first time? It's such a big name, too.
It's a little... I don't want to say, like, I was nervous to see the show because obviously, like, I was not participating in it. Like, if I did not have a good time, like, we were in West Watkins, so no one would have really noticed. But it was kind of like, I didn't really know what to expect I didn't really have a baseline because I, my parents didn't have access to, I think, Logo at the time, which is what Drag Race was still running on.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't have Logo as part of our cable package. So I never watched Drag Race before. Had never been to any of the local clubs. Because where I live versus Dallas, it's about a 45-minute drive in between. So
mm-hmm.
one doesn't really want to drive 45 minutes to just go see a drag show and drive all the way back at 2 in the morning. So yeah, I didn't really know what to expect. And I didn't really know what I was signing up for at the beginning. But by the end of the night, I was kind of ready for the next year's to come back and start. Because I was like, that was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. At the time, Jackie Beat was really funny, the then host. And a lot of the girls were pretty darn impressive, especially having a pole dancer and I think an Ariel Silks performer.
What?
That year. Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit more about that, if you don't mind.
Yeah, so there was, I think the Ariel Silks person was the pink impersonator. And I think she's still out in Oklahoma City. I'm not quite certain because we haven't seen her in a while.
Mm.
But she, yes, so she came out and she did two pink numbers, obviously. That's her job. And one of them was kind of doing a very basic Ariel Silks kind of routine. And then the other girl, I don't quite remember what she did, like what number or what like routine she was doing, but I do distinctly remember a pole coming out and being strapped to the stage. So she did, I don't recall specifically what she did, but I distinctly remember this pole coming out and we were like, what's about to happen? So it was really just like a grab bag of like a bunch of very typical things that you see across the drag scene of actual female celebrity impersonation, more like risque kind of drag, kind of clean, fishy drag, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And then more like amateur drag. Like it was like the whole spectrum of what you'd expect to see or what you could see at a drag club on one night.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Were there students participating in this one too?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yep. So the student amateur section of the competition was still around at that time. It was about 4 students at that time that would compete against each other for the crown of Miss Dragonfly 2012. Get the cute little crown and some flowers and
the Miss America wave.
I think the one who won that year did the Miss America wave. Sometimes they don't.
I have strong feelings. You gotta do the Miss America wave. But anyway, you said, well, first of all, is there anything else you want to say about that show in particular? Because your first show, that's a heck of a thing.
Yeah.
Your first experience with drag, it sounds like. Had you seen drag at all before? Even pictures?
I hadn't necessarily seen in its traditional, well, not traditional. It's not traditional at all. But kind of like the gay club version of drag before. I mean, I've seen or had watched kind of some theatrical, because I had a theater background. So obviously I knew that drag existed in the world, and I knew that was a thing that, as they describe in theater, no longer exists as a practice. Because I mean, from a theater perspective, that was back when it was basically illegal for women to be on stage.
Oh, the Shakespearean
times. And so the way they kind of paint it was like, oh yes, it's a thing that existed. However, you know, it no longer exists because obviously, I mean, it exists sort of in here and there, but like as a routine practice, it's died out. And it's kind of more circumstantial of perhaps it's a specific character that you have to play, or if so-and-so wants to do it this kind of like that. So that was really the only kind of awareness, I guess, that I had of it was from the Shakespearean theater kind of realm of man putting on a dress and playing the dame of the town, because the actual dame couldn't come in and do it herself. But yeah, it wasn't until Dragonfly that I'd actually really seen the modern perspective of what it is. And it's no longer just putting on a dress and playing a woman. It's becoming the actualization of female personification.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
You're welcome.
Nice job, sociologist.
Quote me.
Somebody will. So we had the Cher impersonator, and she was mm-hmm. a big deal. And then you said the next year we had somebody, Raven.
Yep, Raven came in. So that year pretty much stayed pretty true to the prior year. Mm-hmm. I believe the same group of professional performers came out from Oklahoma City. I also believe that was the last year that we had Jackie Beat as the MC, who she got replaced for various reasons, but no one really knows them. But so she got replaced in the show. And so I believe that the pink impersonator came back. I don't remember if the pole person came back. I don't remember. But Raven came out, which not to say that Raven is less impressive than Chet Michaels in any way, shape, or form, but I believe that headliner, compared to the two girls that had came before her, was slightly less, people were less excited about. Mm. And I only say that because basically what they had gotten was Raja, who had won season three, and then Chad Michaels, who either recently or somewhat recently won All Stars 1, and then the runner-up to All Stars 1 and then season 2. So that, not to say that Raven is less impressive, because that's obviously a lie, but I don't think that a lot of people really knew who she was unless they'd actually watched the show,
mm-hmm.
Rather than just kind of being exposed to it. Because, you know, when you're talking about Raja, you're talking about, oh, well, she's the winner of RuPaul's Drag Race season 3. She's really amazing. Like, look at all the things that she's done. And then when you're talking about Raven, it's just like, oh, well, she was on the show. So I guess people really went into the show knowing who she was as like as an actual performer. I mean, at that point in that method of time, obviously I had known who she was because I had started to watch the shows backwards, because I think at that point was when season 5 had started. So I had kind of pushed backwards to season 2 and done kind of a binge watch up until season 5. And it was a weird year for her at the performance, just because she seemed on it for the performance, but it seemed like it was kind of like a going through the motions kind of performance, and kind of like, you know, she was really only stopping by on her journey through a longer, more exciting list of venues, kind of like how, you know, sometimes you'll get a drag queen who'll stop at a really small, tiny local bar and they'll kind of just like phone it in. Mm-hmm. And just be like, oh, well, I'll just do this really reliable number and wear this like kind of meh outfit, and just because like there's only going to be 50 people there, instead of pulling out all the tricks and stops for this venue that's going to have like 500, which is ironic because there's probably at least 500 people in Watkins, but that's neither here nor there. So yeah, it just kind of looked a little not put together all the way, so to speak. And so I think that was the only part of Dragonfly that was disappointing that year, was that, you know, I was really excited to see her and really excited to see, you know, what she was going to pull. And she had some lump pads and, you know, she kind of just had like a kind of an ill-fitting kind of like jumpsuit without kind of like the legs. You know, kind of like, you know what I'm talking about, kind of like cut up the crotch and everything. That was kind of just in a ugly brown color. It wasn't her best, is what I'm trying to say. It wasn't her best performance, and I don't know why. I don't know what caused that.
No.
Everybody's
got off nights, I guess.
Yeah, everyone's got off nights, and so like I'm not gonna like tell her that she's awful, because it's very far from the case. But it was just it was weird that you know, she'd come out and, you know, she was the big name for the night. And she got outshined by other people, like who also do drag full time, but do it on a much smaller scale. So yeah, and it was, and that was like the weird thing is that, you know, out of that year, I don't recall most of the performances. I don't recall anything. Well, I do recall the voting scandal of that year, because that was the year that they did the app voting, or like the text vote in, to decide the winner of the year. And that was scandalous. But other than that and Raven's kind of meh performances, I mean, there wasn't a lot to recall about that year, compared to other years. And it's weird, because in other years I can go through and list to you a lot of different things. And that year specifically, it's just, I guess she just really left a bad taste in my mouth.
Oh.
That I just remembered this brown weird jumpsuit moment. And I know I've seen it before. I had seen it somewhere, and I don't know where she's worn it before, but I know it was a repeat outfit.
It will pop up. That is a much more nuanced take than you had for the first show. So it sounds like you really kind of got into drag culture, at least.
Yes.
In your
at least a little bit. Like we were on the cusp of it, of really experiencing and understanding, and kind of, I don't want to say being more informed, because that happened a lot later, of like being like really, really aware of things.
Well, had you even joined OSQ&A yet?
Yes. So actually I joined right at the beginning of my freshman year. So I was, you know, by that point, I had a little bit of a reference point, because we had watched Paris is Burning right before Dragonfly of 2012. So I had a little bit of experience, or a little bit of the back culture of kind of the African-American New York
ball culture.
Didn't quite make the connection between kind of like drag now and ball culture quite at that time. Now, obviously, a lot more tied on that connection. And then the year, that 2013 year, is when we watched Tu Wong Fu. So kind of gave a little bit more, well, I mean, who doesn't love seeing Patrick Swayze in full garb, but
little Latin boy in drag, why are you crying?
Yes, exactly. But it gave a little bit more of perspective and understanding of both what was happening in the pageant world, but also kind of like drag's not specifically just like a one-time one-stop shop event. Like for these people, it's careers. And so kind of learned to respect what they do, and so in a way support what they do.
Mm-hmm.
So
it doesn't sound like you ever had any desire to do it yourself.
No. Yeah, not at that time. No, because back in 2013, I had just lost a bunch of weight. So I had slimmed down, I think, to under 90, which is about 20 off what I am now. That's fine. But I used to be about 270 something pounds, so not too easy to amateur drag it up in that realm of weight.
It can definitely be stressful.
Yeah. Because someone had mentioned that, like, as a joke, that I should do it, and I was just like, nah. It's like, can you imagine trying to find anything? Not even just a dress, like a blouse, a women's plus size pair of pants that would fit around my waist, that I wouldn't have to go and get like extended, like all these things. I was like, no, I'm good.
Yeah, you're pretty tall, aren't you?
That's the other problem. Is that yeah, both I'd have to find something that was made for an Amazonian woman, and I'd also have to find a size 14 heel. Both of these things,
tough,
not easy to do, unless you buy bell bottom jeans and somehow manage to find a size 14 pair of shoe from somewhere. Because some Amazonian woman just happened to have a pair of 14 heels and gifted them away to the Goodwill. But
oh, yes.
I know, it's a beautiful image to paint.
It is incredible, honestly. So, you were talking when we had our little pre-interview about how Raven interacted with the other performers. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like that was a factor in leaving sort of a bad taste in your mouth. What was that?
Yeah, and I think that this is not necessarily like Raven was doing something like having a really off night. I think it's just the way in which Raven's personality comes off when she's not performing, because kind of depending upon, I guess, when you catch her, her personality can be kind of abrasive, kind of like sandpaper rubbing against whatever you're rubbing against. So she can kind of be a bit difficult, and I don't think it's that she means to. That's just her personality. And so it seemed kind of like I mentioned, you know, it was kind of like that detour stop through to go maybe to Kansas or Manhattan, Kansas, or like Denver, Colorado, like somewhere else, or Dallas, like somewhere kind of bigger, because she seemed kind of very like, get me out of here, I'm ready to go. Chad stayed and did there. I don't know if Chad made it happen or if SUAB at the time made it happen, but I know that she did a kind of like a meet and greet photo shoot with all the VIPs that came in for that show, which were primarily kind of the event organizers and the people who came in and did some of the judgings and things like that. So I know that that happened in 2012, and I know that it did not happen in 2013. At least from my awareness of that you know, she kind of did her thing and kind of left, which is totally fine. I mean, everyone has their own schedule, but I think that that also kind of created that issue of where she seemed very much kind of like, I'm here for McCoin, and then I'm gonna get out.
Oh, you got the flyover state treatment, huh?
Yeah. And I mean, I don't think that it's her fault, but she was the last Rude Girl that they brought in. And I think that a massive portion of that was the budget cuts that happened between 2013 and 2014. Uh-huh. Because basically across the board, we all, like the whole state of Oklahoma, had a bunch of budget cuts. And so the funding that SUAB most likely got went down. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's also the reason why it shifted out of West Watkins very soon after, was because it was too expensive for the budget to handle. So I think that that's why, again, I don't think it's her fault specifically, but I think it kind of created a reason to not try to find the funds, because they could kind of create this atmosphere without having to headline it.
That makes sense. Like, mm-hmm. So what was this about a judges panel? You were talking about the voting by text and how mm-hmm. that was a kerfuffle. What was happening before the voting by text debacle?
Well, in 2012, I don't think I really paid enough attention to know what had happened. I want to say that it wasn't public vote. I don't think that that's necessarily accurate, because like I said, I didn't pay attention. But I know that 2013 was pretty much purely SUAB opened up a some sort of account on an app or whatever that was kind of like a voting app, and you would text this specific number to vote for contestant number one. You'd text this specific number to vote for contestant number two. And then you would have like a like a 10-minute kind of professional break there where they would do two numbers from two of the professionals and they'd come back and tell you who won the battle. Very much, I think, in my opinion, I think that they're trying to go somewhat in line with RuPaul's Drag Race. Although it was very strange because, like, it was not that, like, who did a better lip sync performance to one song. It was who had a better performance to two different songs. Mm. So kind of a little wonky. But yeah, that was the year that it was 100, from my understanding of it, because literally it was the only judging opportunity was you text in and they gave you results. It was purely 100% public opinion. And so the reason why it was such a kerfuffle is that basically that year, if I remember this correctly, I believe that was the year that we had one amateur individual who was like first time in drag runless. Another individual who had competed at the year prior. I don't know about the year prior to that. So at least had 1 year, if not 2 years under their belt. A third individual who had competed in the year prior and got cut and didn't make it to obviously the top, the crown. And then I believe a drag king. And basically what ended up happening was the amateur first time in drag individual beat out the girl who had 1 year in her belt. And then the girl who had 1 or 2 years under her belt beat out the drag king. So then you go up to here and everyone just assumed that the girl who had been doing Dragonfly for 2 or 3 years was going to take it. And then here was this person who literally entered on a whim, and kind of it had appeared, and it wasn't, but it had appeared, had haphazardly put things together, was planned. I love this individual dearly, but it was planned. Haphazardly kind of threw together kind of like a country girl look, and kind of, like I said, spur of the moment, he kind of entered Dragonfly and won. So people kind of, I don't want to say they didn't protest, they're just very upset. Not in the fact that this individual had won, but more so in the way in which they went about selecting the individual. Because it seemed a lot less like kind of like a comprehensive list of like, oh yes, they did a good lip sync, they have a good appearance, good outfit, they were entertaining and these things. It was literally just, everyone in this crowd loves this person. Everyone's just going to vote for this person. Mm-hmm. Especially when you look at this person up here, who ended up winning, was rather well known across campus and in their academic college. So, you know, it kind of became this issue of, did she really win? Which, if you ask me, I think that yes, she won between the two. But a lot of people were questioning whether or not she actually won or if she just got all the votes from all the people who actually liked this person as an individual outside of the competition.
A popularity contest rather than a drag contest.
Yeah, and making it a lot more about, I love blank, I'm only voting for blank. Even if contestant number two like destroys the stage and like tears it apart, I'm still voting for him over here.
Mm-hmm.
So it was quite the scandal, quite scary.
Did they change that the next year?
Yeah, that was the only year that it happened. And again, I didn't really pay too much attention to the voting rigor. Of what they used, but I believe that was the year that they brought in more specifically a kind of, I don't want to say professional panel, because they weren't professionals and like understanding drag, but university staff and faculty members.
A non-student panel.
Yes, and a non-student panel that came in and judged them a lot more in line with kind of a pageant of what you'd see kind of at a drag pageant, like a really informal, weird Oklahoman drag pageant for amateurs.
That sounds right.
It's like drag for tots. Oklahoma drag for tots.
Baby drag.
Yes.
Do you have any memory of who was on that judging panel?
I'd have to... I know that gosh, I think that she is or was either in the history of the English department. Her name is Laura, and blanking on her last name. At the time, she was the president or chair, whatever their top position was, for the Equality Network.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was the one that she was under before they merged together into Freedom Oklahoma.
Oh.
I cannot recall her last name. I know her first name's Laura. She's a professor on campus.
Okay.
So I think that she was on there. Dr. Elmer Sanders, I believe, was also on that panel. And I think there was a third individual. And I'm not quite certain who the third individual was who brought it out. But, you know, obviously Laura was well immersed into queer culture, being the head of the Equality Network in Oklahoma. And also being well versed in understanding in Oklahoma State students and the Oklahoma State culture, since she's a faculty member here. And then Dr. Elmer Sanders, the director of multicultural affairs, she knew of what was going on. I don't know if she had quite yet attended a show before, so that I think was her first show in 2014. 2014 that got interesting fast. And then there was a third panel member. I don't know who that person was. Not really important, but yeah, it was a lot more of kind of, mostly unbiased full-time faculty or staff people,
grown-ups.
Judging non-grown-ups in drag.
Mm-hmm. I know you were president of SOTA or OSQ&A, whichever one it was at the time, for mm-hmm. a minute, for a year, right?
Yep.
Was it this year?
No, it was the next year. So it was 2014, so August 2014 to May 2015.
Okay.
So yeah, it was kind of right after that happened. I was on the exec board that year, but I was as a historian. So
you just wrote down the drama instead of creating it, huh?
Kind of. I didn't really take any pictures of Dragonfly, but that's just because, you know, you're out in West Watkins, it's dark, you can't really take pictures, period. It's like taking pictures of the club, you don't.
It's impossible to photograph a drag show in process.
But yeah, I didn't really do a lot of picture taking. Most of what I did was kind of like doing our brochure, and it was kind of like a placeholder.
Oh.
Yeah, it's fine.
It seems cool.
It was what it was.
Yeah. But before we get to that, with this judges panel, Dr. Elmore Sanders,
mm-hmm.
didn't you say something happened that was a little bit scandalous?
Yes. So as I mentioned, in 2013 was the last year that Jackie Beat was the MC.
Mm-hmm.
And so to replace her, they brought in Carmen Devereaux, who's been doing it since that year. And that was the year that, I mean, so she always does a Disney number. Well, she doesn't always, but she usually does sort of a Disney number. And so she did a Snow White number, I believe. I believe it was the Snow White number. It's either that or the Cinderella one. I don't remember. And that was totally fine, you know, because it's kind of like campy and funny, and there were audio jokes starting there and things like that. And then there was another performance that she did where she came out kind of as a cow and basically was like, it like pushed the line, like, you know, your drag's kind of on this like line of kind of being, you know, you can be slightly right adjacent and be kind of offensive, and it's kind of okay because you're right at the line, or kind of just like almost not quite offensive, but you pushing it. Like, you're pushing it.
You're on that line.
And she was, like, over here. Of, like, kind of, like, no longer in the realm of offensive, just kind of really uncomfortable. Because it was kind of painting that picture of I don't want to get too vulgar. Painting the picture of milking oneself, basically. Because she was a cow, and that was the joke. But it kind of, like, gravitated around the line of it being almost sexual, like, a purely sexual. And it also went on for forever. It wasn't, like, kind of like a quick joke. Like, ah, yes, here's this 10-minute clip to kind of get a laughter. Like, it was, like, a solid, like, 2 minutes of content. Or at least it seemed like it was, like, 2 minutes. It might have been 30 seconds, but it seemed like it just went on and on and on. It created a bit of stir. Because, you know, normally, you know, Dragonfly is always kind of, again, on that line. And it wasn't unusual for, you know, someone to say something that was kind of slightly more off the line, but still was overall pretty okay. And that one, I guess, just really pushed the line too far to the right. Like, it went, it was gone. The line didn't exist anymore. And and it also wasn't helpful that Dr. Lee Bird, the Vice President of Student Affairs, was there, and Dr. Kirksey, Jason Kirksey from Institutional Diversity, was also at that event that year specifically. So watched that happen. So it was, like I said, uncomfortable, kind of disturbing, and it didn't cause a sort of censorship of the show. It just kind of caused it to be slightly more, controlled's not the right way to say it, but basically that it was, the content of it just needed to be looked at by another person.
Regulated.
Not necessarily regulated, because it wasn't like they said, no, you can't do this. It was just kind of like, we would like to know what you're doing or what you plan to say. So we know if that's going too far, and we'd like for you to kind of maybe curb it. Like, you can keep this joke, but maybe we rephrase it. Or you can keep this, you know, this kind of comment, but maybe we leave off the last 4 words. Like, you know, the part where it's kind of a lot less of kind of like a, like an actual, like, funny aside, and more so like an obscene comment sort of stuff. And I think that a lot of that was not necessarily to cover the university side, because obviously, like, there's no, like, legal action that was going to happen, or, like, someone's going to be so upset, whatever. But to kind of, I guess, try to prevent that from happening again, of really making sure that it kind of stays within that line. And it can, again, gravitate in and out, but trying to not push it so far away that either the university, it could tarnish the image of the university, tarnish the image of the event, or tarnish the image of the organization or the community as a whole at OSU. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. You got to keep your audience in mind, right?
Yeah. And so, and this is also the time where, again, since it was at West Watkins, it was open to pretty much whoever wanted to come. So it wasn't kind of like how it is now, where it's a lot more student heavy that attends. Like, there were people who were coming out of Tulsa, Oklahoma City, Ardmore, family members, or like family, like whole families that were coming out of Stillwater to come see, because it was kind of, it was a big deal. Especially for a lot of individuals who either were queer identifying or had a family member or a friend that was, and they would all come together and things like that. So there were a lot, and even community members who were non-queer identifying, that like it was kind of like going out and seeing a musical theater event at the Town and Gown. Like, it was just something fun to do. We live in Stillwater, there's something fun to do here, so it was something fun to do. And so I think that was a lot of what pushed it, was, you know, it might have, if you weren't aware of what you were signing up for, might have been pretty extreme. And I think that they got enough complaints about it, both internally and externally, that caused kind of the censure, like the check. And I don't think that they do it anymore. I think it's because it was Karin's first year and she just thought that she was living in this realm of understanding what she does for the rec room, which I think is where she is right now. But what she does for a club is what she could do here. And that doesn't quite match what you can really do at a university campus. So I think that that was kind of why it was an issue, was she was learning, it was her first time. She only knew really how to entertain in the club and not for a group of college students and non-queer identifying community members, and still make it fun. Like, so she probably thought that everyone could relate to it, and I don't think that everyone quite agreed.
Oh.
Yeah.
Lord. How do you think all this impacted the next show?
It impacted it quite a bit, because that next year was a bit more kind of, I don't want to say reined in, but it seemed kind of slightly less authentic, only because before that Dragonfly had just been kind of like, they had a list of things that they might have talked about, and it was just kind of like pulling from them just like randomly. Which is kind of like what you do like a normal MC. Like, you kind of have like a bullet point list of like what you might say or what you could say, and it's up to you to pick out when you're going to say it, kind of things like that. Or when you're going to tell this story, or when you're going to make a funny joke about the next performer, and if you're going to say it the first time they come out, the second time they come out, things like that. And so that year was a bit more reined in. And I don't want to say like PC'd, or not PC, but PG'd. No, that either works. But it was more so like people were being very careful as to not step on toes and to not go above and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not to say that it wasn't least less entertaining of a year. It was just a lot different compared to the years prior, where you kind of always, like I said, teetered on the line. It seemed like we were kind of a little bit more to the left of the line. And maybe like one or two jokes happened, and it's like, whoa! And then it went right back. And it like, you know, teeter-tottered back. Because again, they didn't want to have the same issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that obviously that issue has gone away. But it was kind of, yeah, it was a different year for just that reason only. Because I don't think that that was the year that we had moved, and I don't think that that was the year that really anything wonky had really happened. It was just a matter of Carmen and I think the other girls were being very, very cautious. And I mean, you wouldn't really want to lose a gig like that because it's something you said, so it makes sense. You kind of be a little more cautious about what's going on.
Was it still in the West Watkins at that point?
That's the thing that I don't remember. I don't think so.
Were you there? You missed 1 year.
I missed 1 year, and I don't think it was that year. I believe that it was the year after this, the year that I missed. I'm trying to think back to the themes. Because 2012 was Vegas, 2013 was Wizard of Oz, was Yellow Brick Road. 2014 was the circus. And then 2015, I think, was Candyland.
That sounds
so
right.
Yeah, so it was in the theater that year. So I think that was the also, that probably was also another contributing factor of when you're in the union, you're a lot more accessible, if that makes sense, to what's being said. And versus like in West Watkins, like we had West Watkins like the whole night. Really, we had it for the whole half day because they had to be in there doing checks, doing their makeup, getting ready, putting the stage together, like all the nine yards. So like basically we had that building for almost the entire day. And it was really just us in there because after 6 o'clock, there's really only like maybe four classes that meet in there during the week. It's mostly offices in the department. So they go home at 5. So like, you know, it's just us. Versus when you're in the union, there's so many other things happening in the union. So I have a feeling that might have kind of, keep your head down a little bit. And I know that move really affected attendance. Not so much that people didn't want to attend it, because it was very much not the case. It was an issue of there was only so many tickets they could sell. Because you went from West Watkins that could hold upwards of about 700, 800. Well, I think it was about 700 with the kind of arena-esque seating that they would do, because they would do like the long stage, runway stage, and then seating all across. So it could sit about 700. Then you go over to the union, sits about 200. So yeah, there was a bit of a raise on that one, in that really it became only students could come. Because there really was no way in years prior that you could call in and purchase your ticket over the phone and give them, and then you would reserve it basically, and then you pay when you got there. That option went away. You really just had to purchase them. You had to be there physically to purchase them, basically.
The door, I think it was?
I don't remember if it was at the door or if it was that you could buy some of them prior to the event, but I think that could have been the year that it was kind of like at the door sale. So all in all, I mean, like, not to say that it was a bad year, because it wasn't. It was just a strange year because so many things had like, you know, like normally when you do an event or when an event happens, like there's a small change that you make because, this isn't quite working and we need to change this. But overall, the event's going rather well. So we're just going to kind of change this or bring someone else in. And like this year was the year that was just like, everything has to change. We got to start all over, basically. And that was also the year that SUAB took it over, like, completely. So between kind of the PC police, that's what I'm going to call them, the venue change, the audience, and SUAB taking it over, I think all of those things kind of created this kind of weird hodgepodge version of Dragonfly. That deviated slightly from what it used to kind of be. And I only say that because, SUAB obviously was highly involved in it prior. They were a large reason of the reason why they ended up with the headliners from 2011 to 2013. But the individuals that were spearheading the committee that put it on were queer identifying, and had other individuals in that committee that were queer identifying. Versus you look at it more now and it's a mostly non-queer identifying group or committee of individuals who are planning an event for a queer community. So I think that's why it kind of like got flipped on its head a little bit, was kind of like they were thinking in a way of what would they want instead of actually finding out what I want and what we would like to have happen and what actually happens at a drag show versus what they see on RuPaul's Drag Race. So yeah, it was a bit of a year.
Sounds like
maybe that's why I blocked it out of my memory. That it's just too much for me to handle. So I just kind of remember the theme, and I don't remember anything else about it.
Mm-hmm.
I do remember the gumdrops on the stage though, when they almost got knocked over.
What?
I mean, I had little not red solo cups, but different colored solo cups around the stage as like gumdrops, and they kept getting knocked over because so and so would go off the stage or like walk off the stage and knock three of them over.
It seems like a dangerous setup.
Well, they weren't supposed to, because it was on like around the front of the stage and the steps as well.
Oh,
you know what I'm talking about? There's like that ring of seats.
Yeah.
So they kept going down there because one girl, I guess her significant other was in the VIP seating or something, or like parents. I don't know who they were. So she wanted to go interact with them during her performance, and so she got off, went down, and then kicked some off, and then went down the step and kicked some more off, and then had to go back up, and yada, yada, yada. You get the point. yeah, weird year.
It sounds weird.
Yeah.
Did you go to the next year at all?
Well, I was going to. I ended up not going, but that's just because I had an awards banquet to go to with my parents. But that year was also a special year in its own way.
Tell me more.
Mostly, well, that was the year that I remember it as two drag kings. That number could be off, but there was basically, you know, the way that Dragonfly works is that it's an audition-based show, and so SCIB hosts the auditions about a month prior to the show. You come in, you audition, you get cast or you don't get cast. Same way that you would if you went out to do The X Factor, The Voice, you went out to try out for a musical or a theater show. It's all the same. Either you make it in because you've shown us promise, or you don't. And obviously they're not that mean. They're like, you know, thank you for coming out and doing what you did. However, you know, we just don't think that, you know, you're right for this year. Come back next year. And I think that next year will be your, you know, like that showbiz way of telling you no. And so there were, I think, six queens. Well, there were probably more than six queens, but there were six queens that got cast into the show, which was an inflation from the prior years, because it was normally around four or five girls that would come in for the amateur section of Dragonfly. And so there were these six girls that came in and got cast. There were at least two drag kings that I know of that auditioned. One got in. And from my understanding of the casting, I believe almost all of the queens that auditioned got in. There might have been one person that didn't get in that I don't know of, but overall, they mostly all got in. And so the drag king that did not get cast raised a massive fit about it being basically an issue of being discriminated against, and that they were unfairly treated because they were a drag king, basically. Like, the way they seemed to really paint it, or at least it came off, was that the committee was against drag kings. And so they included one to be diverse, but overall, it was kind of like, they made it out to seem like it was like they had to include a drag king. So they just picked one, and it was not them. And in my professional opinion, from what I've heard, they could have used another year, because it was kind of a bit questionable, but
not cooked all the way through quite yet.
Not quite, no. Like, you're on the cusp of greatness, but right now you're on a Likert scale, you're a solid two. That's some shade for you, but that's the reality. And so well, actually, I take that back, because it wasn't six. It was four or five. There was one girl that didn't get in. So then they ended up casting everyone. Everyone who auditioned made it in. And that created the longest Dragonfly to date. So much so that my award banquet started at 7:30. So the show started at 7. my war banquet started at 7:30. I was over in the ballroom in the theater in the union, so right next door. And my award banquet ended at 9, and I walked over to Dragonfly, and they were maybe like not even 2/3 done with the show. So, because they still had at least 2 more professional performers to go and 3 amateurs. So probably another hour, if that, plus the crowning and all that mess. Because you, like, at that point, you have to do the judging, you have to tally the scores, you got to stall, all that stuff. So, yeah, it wasn't anything, like, that they did wrong. It was just kind of that instance, that moment, made that show just terrible. Only from the aspect of it was almost pushing 3.5 hours. And I mean, even you could go to a show and see like 12 queens perform and it'll still be like 2 hours long because everyone only gets 3-minute number. You get a 3-minute number, you come off. You have a minute of speech, 3-minute number, you come off. Like, you know, and they, you know, they're professionals. They know how to do it. But yeah, like it was just, I remember like wanting to poke my head in and being like, oh my God, what's going on? And I was just like, no, I'm not going to do it. I can't do it. And I just kind of went home. Yeah, I was like, and from my understanding, it was, obviously not the best Dragonfly that we've had. I would imagine based off of what I've heard that 2015's kind of more restrained version. This was still better than this one. And it was also the year, and I, like I said, I believe this is not the fault of SUAB or the organizers or anyone. I believe it was the fault of the individual who raised the issue, the massive stink, in order to avoid any other future controversies. They went to superlatives that year. And so someone, so basically everyone who participated felt appreciated. Yeah, there was, that was the year that there was no Miss Dragonfly. It was best dressed and best lip syncer, most entertaining, crowd or crowd pleaser or something, like, you know, like each person had their own way of feeling like they, that they had shined. And I think that the real reason that they did that was they wanted to make sure that if so-and-so, who had already raised a fuss, didn't win, then they weren't going to raise another one.
That makes sense.
And I don't think it was the smartest move, but it was the move that they took. And for that, I respect their decision. But it kind of stole the aspect of the show away. In that, you know, it was, the show is designed to be a pageant. It's what it was always kind of meant to be. And so when you steal that aspect away, it's like saying that Miss and Mr. Hispanic OSU is just going to be superlatives. Because you want to make sure that you all feel appreciated. But no one's going to be Miss or Mr. Hispanic OSU because we want to make sure that you all feel appreciated.
So everyone gets a participation trophy.
Yes. So I mean, we do live in the world of participation trophies, and I will admit that. But that really robbed Dragonfly of its own essence of why Dragonfly exists, to be entertaining, to expose people to drag, and at the end of the day, for us to have our own version of the Miss Blanks OSU. Because that's something that we all, that at that, you know, with Dragonfly in there, basically all the OMA organizations had an opportunity to have a Miss Blank whatever, with the exception of the women's organizations. But I mean, you don't really need to have a Miss Women's Minority Association or a Miss Women's Political Active whatever. Whatever they used to be.
I would go to that pageant, though.
It would be an interesting pageant because it'd be like kind of like an activism pageant. Actually, I'd be interested to see that. But
anyway,
But yeah, most pretty much that was what was missing.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like, you know, the straights had robbed us, so to speak. But again, I don't think it was out of their control. It wasn't something that they could have stopped from happening, because of that individual that was just troublesome.
These things happen.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you just have a student that's, there's only so much you can do. And that rate, the only thing that they really could do was make sure that everyone felt like equals. Although they weren't. At all. But
did the crown come back the next year? That was last year, wasn't it?
Yes, the crown came back, much to everyone's surprise. I wasn't expecting it, because I was kind of expecting that we would be on this permanent superlative happy joy ride. But yes, it actually came back. And that year, I don't even remember what that theme was. Probably something questionable.
Outer space?
No, that was this past year's. Mm. It was outer space. Dragon space, or whatever it was. Drag queens in outer space, that's what it was. I don't recall what it was. Probably dumb. I'm gonna edit that out. So it was a less entertaining amateur show, and the only reason I say that is because usually when you come into this show, you have people who have been doing drag for a little bit. Like, you have a good, it's kind of like a mixture of people who are doing it for the first time because their friends docked them on, or they were so excited to dragonfly and do something different that they wanted to do it. You have a group of people who it's their first time in drag, but they at least kind of have some sort of background support knowledge, or maybe they know a queen and they came out and they helped them do it. Someone who did dragonfly the year before or years prior, and someone who has done drag like routinely, like all the time. There's usually, it's like a weird mixed playing field. And that's not to say that, you know, the person who's at the top, who's been doing drag all the time, is going to win, because it's not the case, as we saw in 2013. But that year in 2017, it was mostly on the lower spectrum of people who had been doing drag kind of here and there, or people who were doing it for the first time ever. And I mean, the performances were fine. Like, it wasn't like they were bad by any means necessary. It was just kind of, you were watching what looked like actual drag for tots, or like Toddlers and Tiaras drag edition. Because you could see, like, in their faces, like, you could see how terrified they were and how, like, they were kind of trying to mask it with charisma and you know, trying to be amazing. But in reality, you could just see, like, them being white-faced. and so it kind of, you know, the event was fine. Like, it's not to say that, like, they ruined the event. It was just that, you know, it was kind of, that year was kind of anyone's game, like quite literally anyone's game, because they all kind of existed on this even playing field of there wasn't one person who was like, oh, this person, it's going to be this person. It has to be this person, because everyone else was kind of meh, but this person like stood out. And that really showed on who got the crown, because the person who got the crown, was an individual that like barely knew anything about drag. From what I understand about this individual, like it was like first time in drag, first time exposure to drag, first time doing anything, and they kind of just found kind of something at, you know, the resale shop or something. It fit, they wore it, went on stage, put on kind of like a shake and go wig, some mascara, and probably penciled their eyebrows, put on some lipstick, and said, let's go, I'm ready for Dragonfly. And that's not a read, that's literally, you know, what it was. And that's who won that year. Much to my surprise, because it was a little girl, from southern somewhere, who had been doing it like wasn't their first time, wasn't doing it like professionally, but did it here and there, like around where she grew up. She's a lot better, but that's fine.
Well, I hope she hears this interview and if her
I hope so
warm.
Too. Because I'm sure that she's going to come back because she's still here.
Good.
Because she was in it last year too. I'm sad because she's in it last year. And yeah. So shocking, literal shocking crowning moment. Like Sasha Velour gets crowned as RuPaul's Drag Race winner version of, wow, what just happened? Kind of a moment. And I think that year was the year that it kind of, at least for me, I'm speaking on my behalf, not on everyone's, but it kind of was like, wow, okay, we're back at Dragonfly. Like, we're back. Because that was the reason, you know, that Dragonfly existed, was it wasn't supposed to be the same as RuPaul's Drag Race or on that caliber or something that you, if you go to Dallas and you see a drag pageant, it's not supposed to be up here. It's supposed to be down here. It's supposed to be kind of a little grungy and a little dirty because it's students doing drag, sometimes for the first time, for students. So it was the first, at least, well, I mean, there's not much to speak on because literally 2016 and 2015 happened, but it was the first time that we really felt, or I felt a return to kind of that aura of Dragonfly, of what it was intended to be, not what it kind of was forced to be.
That sounds really nice.
Yeah, that was a nice, nice philosophical statement I just made.
Perfect. Was that the most recent show?
No. Well, that was still 2017.
Oh.
Yes. Because 2018 not that much of a bigger show. I think they really only added one extra individual to the lineup. It was like probably one or two. That was when they brought the boxes in. Such a weird.
What?
Do you not remember when they all came out like? The Chicago number style, but like without the bars or the jail or anything. Like it was like they presented each one out of a box. It's really weird. It had nothing to do with the theme. Nothing to do with the theme whatsoever.
It sounds cute.
It was cute, but you also have to keep in mind the individual I described earlier is about as tall as I am. So finding a box that she could stand in and get out of, like she caught her wig a little bit, it's really funny. But she recovered. But yeah, this past year was on caliber with 2017. Slightly better performances in my opinion than 2017. But I think that's because a lot of the performers that came out of 2017 came back into 2018. Mm. So you saw a little bit more experience. I don't want to say experience because it's like, you know, for some of them, I'm sure it was like their second time then. But they at least understood what they were setting up for and how to prepare for it this time around. But then you also saw a mix of an individual who, I think someone from SUV, I'm not fully certain if she was with SUV or not, that was a drag king that went up and did a drag king performance. I think at least three returners from the year prior. And I think the other individuals were first timers. So like I said, we were back on that scale, that range of both exposure and experience. And we were also back on kind of the scale of, yes, drag king to drag queen. And not just, you know, drag queens, but that here right there. So yeah, and then of course they still had the crowning moment, which was slightly more anxiety-driven. Anxiety-driven is how you could say, just because there's more people involved.
Oh.
Because it wasn't like you know how like when they do Miss America, it's like okay, well you did this, and then we're gonna cut half of you. And then, you know, we're going to do it again. We're going to do something else again. And then we're going to cut three of you. There's going to be two left. And then we're going to crown someone. You how most pageants work. Dragonfly's never really operated on that caliber because we've never really had enough people that have to do that, with the exception of the popular text vote thing. With, I mean, even then, that was four people. So that's neither here nor there. That was the year where it was like, okay, there's like not seven people standing up there, six or seven people standing up there. And they're just like, all right, and we're going to announce who the winner is in like awkward, you know, 30-second, like anxious pause. And they just announced it. I was like, all right, we win. They're like, you know, so-and-so won. So like, it's kind of, that's why I say it's like slightly more anxiety driven. Cause it's just like, oh, like there's just this line of people who are just like, six people are gonna have their hearts crushed.
Oh.
And you're just waiting. You're just like waiting. You know, versus when it's like four people. And it's like, you know, usually two of them might know they're probably not gonna make it, but they're still hopeful. And when they don't make it, they're like, oh, it's that pageant of like, oh, thank you, congratulations, I'm so proud of you. And then they go backstage and cry. Yeah, I know. It sounds terrible to say. But it was true. Like, it was awkwardly awkward, but also kind of exciting at the same time. Like, it was awkwardly exciting because you didn't know who was going to win, because it was between probably about three people who could have won. And you didn't really know, like, if it was going to... I didn't really know if it wasn't going to be like a... all right, so you've narrowed it down to three. Now go again. You know what I'm saying? Because that year, the panel, like, it was, like, a lot more, like, actual pageant panel. So that's one thing I forgot to mention. There was a year where it was, I think it was 2015.
Mm-hmm.
Or 20, I don't remember. I don't remember which. I think
it's fine.
It was one of the years where the panel came in, and I think it's 2017, where the panel came in, and it was an actual pageant panel. Like, all right, so-and-so, describe to me a point in your life where you overcame an extreme challenge, and what was it? Something that you would expect to answer under a minute and have, like, how would you like to solve world hunger-esque question? That factored into their crowning. I don't really think that it did, but they did it. Like, it was something that they were trying something new. They're like, let's try it, see what happens. And so that's, you know, we didn't really know what to expect. We were like, okay, well, maybe they'll go into like this like really strange weird pageant thing, or maybe it'll just be like, surprise, here's Oops, I Did It Again by Britney Spears, perform. Or like, you know, like whatever. Like, you know, they were just gonna pull something. And then it's just like, yeah, like something. And then it's just like, no, here's the winner, we're going home. Okay, bye. That's just like, all right, I'm pleased.
Okay. Wow. Was that this most recent year? Okay. So we've been talking a little over an hour. I have a couple more little questions for you, and then I'll let you go back and eat your lunch or whatever you wanna do. So I was going to ask what you think makes Dragonfly Dragonfly, but I feel like you've already answered that a lot. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else you want to say about what makes this show unique?
I think the biggest thing is that it's so accessible in nature, in that it seems as if it was created to give us a space and a safe space to kind of do something that's very intertwined with our culture, but to also bring it out of our culture and bring other people in to it, which is something that you don't see a lot with more cultural events on campus. Like, for example, I've mentioned the Miss and Mr. Hispanic OSU. That's not going to be something that's going to be widely attended by the campus student population. Just by nature of fact, it's just not. Like, it's not like a bunch of students are gonna be like, you know what, I wanna go to this pageant really bad. But with Dragonfly, it's so unique in that that does exist. And that people wanna bring their friends, or a bunch of straight people do want to come and see it, or it's, they know someone who's performing and they want to support them, or it's someone's student, like a full-time staff or faculty member, it's their student, they want to come out and support them, but they've never seen drag, things like that. So I think that that's something that's very special and unique about it, that you can't, you wouldn't find anywhere else on campus, event-wise, of a group of students who are completely unrelated and have no idea what's about to happen, but still come anyway, and probably get so confused. But learn, but like really learn a lot about drag culture, LGBT culture, basically seeing what you'd see at a club at a university, slightly scaled down, slightly.
That's a good way to put it. I like it. So you've been to this show several times, and it sort of coincided with you at least coming out to your parents.
Mm-hmm.
If you'd never gone to any of these dragonflies, how do you think your life as a gay person would be different?
Well, it probably would have taken me a lot longer to pick up Drag Race. And I think, I don't know, because I think the first time going to Dragonfly was the first kind of experience where I was in a queer, mostly queer space, or at least a queer centered space. And especially being in Oklahoma, it's not something that you see very often. So I think that because that happened, I both became more comfortable being in queer center spaces, because I had never really had those opportunities growing up in suburban Texas. And also I became a lot more comfortable being around queer identifying individuals as a whole. And not to say that I wasn't, but I'm talking about like the full spectrum of individuals, and not just being comfortable or aware of being around a bunch of gay men, being around non-binary individuals, transgender individuals, lesbians, everyone under the umbrella. And I think that because I had all of these experiences, at least in the first year, it kind of forced me to push myself into learning more. And that's not to say that if I hadn't gotten Dragonfly, I wouldn't have done it, because it's probably not the case. I'm a naturally inquisitive individual, so I probably would have still kind of sought out that information. But I feel like I'd be a lot further back in my understanding of both LGBT culture, LGBT history, general awareness of drag, and have that all those things kind of fit into my being, my individual, and who I am. Because I'd be missing like a whole component, or at least for a little bit, I'd be missing a whole component of what is so central to my identity currently. So yeah.
That's wonderful. Is there anything else you'd like to say before I stop the recording?
I don't think so. I think I said everything.
Okay. Yeah, this has been a wonderful interview. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.